Chapter 9. Now about that time, as it turned out, Antiochus retreated in disorder from the region of Persia. For he had entered the city called Persepolis and attempted to rob a temple and gain control of the city. On this account, the multitude rushed to the rescue with weapons, and as a result, Antiochus was routed, so that in the end, Antiochus was put to flight by the natives, forced to make a shameful retreat. Now on his arrival in Ecbatana, he learned what had happened to Nicanor and to Timotheus' party. But overcome with fury, he planned to make the Judeans suffer for the injury done by those who had put him to flight. Therefore, he ordered his charioteer to drive without stopping until he finished the journey. Yet, the judgment of the heaven rode with him. For he said in his arrogance,
"I will make Jerusalem the common graveyard of the Judeans as soon as I arrive there."
But the all-seeing Lord, the God of Israel, struck him down with an incurable and unseen blow. Now at the moment he had ceased speaking those words, he was seized with excruciating pains in his bowels and sharp internal tortures. Very righteously for the man who had tortured the bowels of others with many strange torments. But far from giving up his insolence, he was even the more filled with arrogance, breathing fire in his fury against the Judeans, and giving directions for the driver to hasten the journey. But as a result, he fell out of the whizzing chariot.
Yeah.
And the fall was so hard that every part of his body was horribly tortured. Now this was how the man who previously, in his superhuman presumption, thought he could command the surges of the sea and imagined he could weigh the heights of the mountains in his scales, was now thrown to the earth and had to be carried on a litter, clearly manifesting the power of God to all. And so, the body of this impious man swarmed with worms. And while he was still alive in anguish and pain, his flesh rotted away, so that the entire army was burdened by the stench of his decay. And shortly before, he had imagined that he could touch the stars of heaven. And now, no one could endure to transport the man because of this intolerable stench. Therefore, at last, broken to pieces, he began to give up his excessive arrogance and to gain some acknowledgement under the scourge of God. For he was racked with pain unceasingly. And when he could no longer bear his own stench, he said,
"It is right to be subject to God, and not to think one's mortal self divine."
But this polluted man vowed to the Lord, who would no longer have mercy on him, saying,
"I shall proclaim Jerusalem a free city."
The same holy city toward which he had been hurrying with the intention of leveling it to the ground and making it a common graveyard.
"I shall give all the Judeans privileges equal to those enjoyed by the Athenians."
the same Judeans whom he had judged not even worthy of burial, but only fit to be thrown out with their children, to be eaten by vultures and wild beasts.
I shall adorn the holy temple with the finest offerings.
The same inner sanctum which he had previously despoiled.
And I shall restore all the sacred vessels many times over. And I shall provide from my own revenues the expenses required for the sacrifices. Furthermore, I will become a Judean myself and shall visit every inhabited place to proclaim there the power of God.
But since God's judgment had righteously come upon him, his sufferings were not lessened by these declarations. So having lost hope for himself, he wrote the following letter to the Judeans in the form of a supplication. Now this was its content.
To my esteemed Judean citizens, Antiochus, their king and general, sends hearty greetings and best wishes for their health and welfare. If you and your children are well, and your affairs are going as you wish, I am glad, for my hope is in heaven. As for myself, I am ill, and I remember with affection the honor and the goodwill which you bear me. On returning from the regions of Persia, I also fell victim to a troublesome illness. So I deemed it necessary to form plans for the common security of all. Actually, I do not despair about my condition. Instead, I have great hope of recovering from my illness. But I also observed that my father, on the times when he encamped in the hinterland, would appoint his successor, so that if anything unexpected happened, or any unwelcome message was brought before him, the people throughout the country would know to whom the government had been entrusted, and so not be disturbed. But I understand that the neighboring rulers and those on the borders of our kingdom are on the watch for opportunities and waiting to see what will happen. So I have appointed as king my son Antiochus, whom I have, more than once, entrusted and commended to most of you, when I made hurried visits to the upper satrapies. Now I have written to him what I have written below. Therefore, I beg and entreat each of you to remember the common and private benefits which you have received, and to continue to show goodwill toward me and my son. For I am confident that, following my policy, he will treat you mildly and humanely in his relations with you.
Therefore, indeed, this man-murderer and reviler, after extreme sufferings, such as he had inflicted on others, came to the end of his life by a most pitiable fate among the mountains of a strange land. But his foster brother, Philippos, brought the body home. Then, fearing Antiochus's son, he later withdrew into Egypt, to Ptolemaios, the mother lover. And this indeed was the end of Antiochus, surnamed the Illustrious.